Welcome, everybody. It's the Hot Stove Society Radio Show here on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Ruggiero, the chef in the hat, from home.
Coming to you from his home office. Terry's still getting over his pneumonia bout and staying safe and away from COVID by staying home, which is good for him. I miss you desperately here in the studio, Terry.
Well, I miss you too, Tom. It's there's nothing better than just shaking hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, it's not trendy right now.
Yeah, even COVID elbows would be fine with me. Anyway, I'm Tom Douglas. I have several businesses operating at the moment, including Seatown Fish Fry and Market down there in the Pike Place Market, the north end there at Western and Virginia. I have Seattle's Serious Takeout out in Ballard, 52nd and 14th Northwest. We're working on getting Dahlia Bakery open in the next month or so. And, of course, we're coming to you from the Hot Stove Society Virtual Kitchen, where we do our classes virtually and, of course, this radio show. There's so much going on, Chef. There's things are fast and furious. We've had the inauguration on last Wednesday, and I had my Delaware Avenue cheesesteak pop-up to honor the fact that Mr. Biden is from Delaware.
How did that go?
It went beautifully. We sold out immediately our 200 sandwiches that we had prepared, and it was quite fun. You know, one of the great things about the Delaware Avenue cheesesteak special pop-up is that every time I put the sandwich meat on the griddle, I get a beef facial because the steam comes right up into my face, and by the time I'm done all day, I'm outdoors, and so I have a sweater on, and I've got an apron on. I smell like a big old cheesesteak by the time I'm done. 8 hours of cooking sandwiches, so that's one of the beauties of cheesesteaks.
Big success. That's cool.
Yeah, super fun. So, Amy, tell me about this Viennetta. Is that how you say it?
It is. I really wish Madeline was here this morning, since she and I have been discussing this frozen treat since it's been swarming the food news. The fanciest cake from our childhood is back. Viennetta's layered, luxurious waves of soft vanilla ice cream and chocolate layers.
You know, I thought I was the only trashy one on this show, but it turns out Amy has a trashy side to her food taste.
Absolutely.
Too. So, yeah.
We all do.
Oh, I don't think you do, Chef. That's the sad part. I think you're Mr. Pure. Also today, Chef Bridget Charters is here to help a listener with their kitchen conundrum. And it's going to get steamy. We have a whole segment on how to steam in your kitchen, because I think it's one of those lost arts. People are a little bit nervous about steaming. Chef Eduardo Jordan is here. That's exciting. He's going to tell us about an event that he's working on. Cities we miss. You know, we like to take a virtual visit in our minds about different cities that we can't wait to go back to when travel gets back to normal and we get to go see our friends around the country and around the world. But today we're going to talk about Seattle. What restaurant is going to be first on your list when we can go back in the restaurants? I know a few months ago when we were allowed back in 20%, I think my first restaurant that I went to, like for a full restaurant experience, was Revel in Fremont. It was really fun. We sat outside, had some of that spicy food. So what's the next one that you're going to go to? And then, of course, we're going to finish up with Eduardo has agreed to be our next victim, Chef Terry, in the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge.
Let's not call him a victim yet.
Oh, no, he's going to be a victim. We're going to crush him. But he's not here, so he doesn't hear us trash talk.
Yeah, let's talk all the trash now.
I know, before he gets on the line, exactly. So we got, like I said, we got a big show. I hope you stay with us, whether you're in your kitchen or in your garden or in your car or wherever you happen to be. Hang out with us for the next 2 hours. We're in the COVID-free zone. Taste of the week, Chef. We have... I've been working on a project for a couple of ranchers over in Montana making bison chili. And I made it just reminded me again of how much you can add to just the most plain thing like chili, how much depth of flavor you can add. And when I was working on this recipe, I took dried ancho chilies and I took the stems off, shook the seeds out a bit. And then I toasted them over an open flame, put them into a pan, and then covered them with apple cider vinegar and orange juice. And just enough to kind of simmer them and bring them back to life. You know, they are dried, and they're really dried. Right? They're laid out in the sun and really dried. And so After that, I take that as soon as that they're softened up, I put them in a blender and I make ancho chili puree. And it is just a fabulous ingredient. And I use some of that into my kind of tomato-based chili, which I was making. And I just got to say that it adds such depth, such a layer of flavor when you actually use real chilies instead of just grabbing a can of chili powder and throwing it into right. your beef and onions.
No, so, absolutely. I think those are very powerful.
Yeah, they're not powerful as in while they're spicy, they're going to knock your head off. They're powerful in a different kind of way, like in a richness kind of way. When you think about the richness mm-hmm. of mole or something like that right. kind of reduced flavor, that's what they add to just the most plain chili. So I made bison and black bean chili for these guys as a tester product that might get into the marketplace somewhere. And it was really good. My first try was really good, and I'm very pleased with it. But I'm just saying that it goes back to that kind of depth of flavor from the ancho chilies. Doing that one step can really make a difference in how you do your most simple dishes at home, whether you're making sloppy joes, barbecue beef, chili, whatever it is. That ancho thing is awesome.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Chef, you have 2 minutes and, for your taste of the week.
A quick thing. Yesterday we roasted a 2-pound pork butt. Kathy had never, she's not a big fan of roast because she was kind of scared of the big size of the roast. And she's not, so I helped her through it. But she's the one who did this. You know, she seared the pork butt. Add some, once the pork butt was seared, she removed it from the pan. Add some onions sliced in the pan. A can of black bean, a can of tomato, whole tomato diced, and made a wonderful soup with a beautiful homemade chicken stock from that. And then we added the julienne pork roast after it was roasted, beautiful rested, sliced thin, and put that into the soup, kind of like a pho idea. My God, that was so delicious. Just like you just said with the ancho chili, that just putting that pork in there just added so much flavor, obviously, to the soup. I also brought a little protein into the soup, which was delicious. Sauteed spinach were in there, black bean tomatoes, sauteed spinach, onions. It was so yummy. It felt very, almost like a raw country soup. It was delicious.
Sounds fabulous.
I just love soup with an attitude. I love that.
I love the fact that you had a 2-pound pork butt. That must have been a very small pig.
Well, obviously, it was a piece of a pork butt.
Yeah, typical pork butt is between 7 and 10 pounds, and so
that's right. It was a piece. That actually, it was from Met Market. It was delicious. It was a really beautiful, beautifully even, a little fat, it was gorgeous piece of. It was a great piece of the pork butt. So
sounds great.
It was delicious.
So, Chef, I want to make sure you have pulled your Viennetta ice cream cake out of the freezer.
Oh, I have.
Is it all tempered and ready to go?
It's ready to go, and I've already tried it.
All right, so we're gonna get to Amy Penning or Amy Richardson, our producer here today. Her favorite bite of the Viennetta cake that's the rage around the country. When we come back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Oh, welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show. We're coming to you from Hot Stove Virtual down in downtown Seattle, 4th and Virginia, the Andre Hotel. This is Tom Douglas.
And Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat from home.
Terry's going to be spending a little time as co-hosting show from his home office, which we're excited to That's share. Right. At some point, we're going to get you on video so we can get back to our Facebook Live production. But until
That's
that
right.
time, we're going to have to take a wait. Okay, I told you we're going to talk steam. But we're also going to cut into this segment a little bit to try this Viennetta. So, Amy, where did this cake come from, and why are you so enamored with it?
Well, this is my taste of the week. Madeline and I have been talking about this, that it has been
Madeline,
all over
our
the
old
food.
Producer.
Yes.
She is dead to me.
She's very old.
She's dead to me. So she's worked someplace else now.
Yeah, she probably remembers this dessert very well since it was from the 80s. Well, this has just been taking over food news that this cake is back. It's once sold in the U.S., but it is still sold in Europe and Asia. It was a household staple in the 90s, reserved for many special occasions. The fanciest cake from our childhood is back. Let me tell you, it took me about 6 visits to different stores to find it as well.
Because it's in high demand.
It's in high demand, and that entire cake was only $5.99.
Chef Kerry, do you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
No, you go. You go. I just can't wait to hear what you're going to say.
This is awful. There is nothing. There's no redeeming quality to this cake. The thing is that the ice cream, it's like it tastes like Cool Whip, which, you know, Cool Whip doesn't have any dairy.
It tastes like water.
Just saying. So I'm going to have to look at the ingredients on this to see if there's actually any dairy in this
ice cream. There is actually dairy. There is dairy, Tom, but there is no egg. And it does taste very crystally and very like water. Uh-huh. It's more like a sherbet to me than an ice cream, for sure.
Isn't it funny, the little taste and flavors we get hooked on as kids? Or maybe it was a great commercial that was presenting it. Or...
I remember the commercial.
Yeah do you? Great.
Mm-hmm.
What caught you?
You know, it kind of reminded
me. Just the fanciness?
It was fancy, and it reminded me of the old school Sizzler commercials. Maybe I should post the commercial on our Facebook.
Maybe you should.
Page.
I read that this comes in like mint flavor, chocolate, vanilla, or maybe even pistachio. Did I read pistachio?
Correct. Yeah, right now they're only selling vanilla, but I cannot wait to hit up the pistachio.
The other thing that I like about this on the box, not only is it from the Good Humor, which I always think of as the truck that drives in front of your house with the music playing, but it is, there's a diagram on the box of the cake, and it shows there's a slice for me, the husband, the mom, the dad, the son, and even the daughter. It's enough for five people, and I could eat this in two bites.
Oh, because you love it so much.
Oh, come on, Tom.
It's terrible. But
you would not eat this in two bites. That's a bit big.
Okay, four. You know, I'm very talented, Terry, when it comes to large bites.
Right. I have a feeling that's true. But you know what? What I like about let's talk about what I like about it. I like the layers of chocolate, how thin and crunchy they are. That's, they call it a cake, but there is no cake. Kathy, my wife, was trying it with me, and she was like, well, I barely feel the cake. I'm like, you can't be feeling cake. There is no cake in here. It's not a cake. It's just a layered ice cream with chocolate and make it crunchy. There's also nothing real in there because it says it on the box. It says all artificial flavor.
Yeah, I'm just having another bite. Just to make sure that it's as terrible as I think it is. The layers are actually like, when you eat a Good Humor bar with the vanilla ice cream in the middle and it's dipped in chocolate and it gets that kind of crackle crunch, that is what the layers are. Yeah, it's
right.
Pretty much terrible.
They actually talk about the layers being sprayed on.
Great. All right, let's go to something more serious right now. Amy, I think Chef and I have said your taste of the week is... should stay in your freezer.
Okay. Or Madeline and I will enjoy the rest of that.
All right. And you shall never mention that.
But thank you for trying.
Yeah, thank you for trying. Let's talk steam. Chef Terry, I feel like steaming is a little bit of a lost art in the American kitchen.
I think definitely.
It's pretty common in maybe a Chinese kitchen or a European, like a Hungarian or Czechoslovakian, Eastern European, where you're steaming dumplings and you're doing things like that. But I just feel like we don't use that process very much in the American kitchen. Do you have any thoughts about that? And how do you steam in your kitchen?
I have I believe it's a KitchenAid container or pot with another perforated pot that I use on top of that and a lid. And I think that's the principle of steaming is actually, it doesn't have to be a special pot. It could be just a, you could use any kind of pot, put a plate upside down in it, a little bit of water, put a pan or a plate with some fish on it or some vegetable and steam. I mean, steaming is a very basic way of cooking that is actually, to me, I think it's very pure because you cover, nothing gets lost. You know, all the flavor stays in there and it's all about the water. I mean, the water bath you're going to make or the steam you're going to make, you can flavor that. You can add flavor to your, let's say a piece of cod, for example, will have a certain profile raw. But if you really, you know, flavor your water and you water your bath, the steam, with all kind of different spices, that will be picked up by the fish. In some ways, not a lot, but in some ways, the number one ingredient I can think of putting in the water is ginger. You know, sliced ginger put into the water, and that definitely flavors that water. So,
when you smell that water, when you smell that steam, if it smells like fresh ginger, that is what's infusing into whatever you're cooking over top of it.
Yeah, and then I've used, you know, I had a plant of lemon verbena, huge plant in my backyard, which we dried the leaves, and we make infusion with it. But, you know, infusion is just like tea, just like a liquid you can use for your steaming. So, like, if you have a tea, a specialty, that's a jasmine tea, that's really nice and powerful, from Smith in Portland, for example, well-conserved flowers in there. You extract all that flavor and you're steaming. You can definitely flavor anything you're going to do. Like if you were warming up some rice quickly in a steamer, that would definitely perfume your rice right away on the outside, for sure.
For sure. And that's the same thing like when you're making rice. Let's say you're making a rice cooker. You're essentially, I mean, I guess you're kind of boiling that. But if you just put one pot of star anise in that rice, it steams, when it cooks up, it'll infuse the whole pot of rice. And that's the same thing with a steam bath. My favorite steam utensil at home is of my wok. I put my wok on the burner. I put it, you know, a nice level of water or sake or some sort of wine or whatever, a combination thereof. And I put some aromatics in, which is usually an orange peel, a star anise pod, ginger, garlic, whatever I happen to have, little bits and pieces left over in my vegetable drawer. And then I use my bamboo steamer, the Chinese-style bamboo steamer that has...
Right.
I shouldn't even say just Chinese because, you know, every Asian culture uses it, it seems like to me. And I put that over top of my water bath and then let the steam just kind of rise up through the slats in the bamboo steamer. And in that case, because the steamer is made out of bamboo, it adds its own flavor, not unlike the way oak barrels add flavor to the wine that's stored in them. The vanillin from the bamboo steamer actually is its own bit of flavor to go along with everything else that you've got going on. So,
yeah, and if you want to get fancy, you can actually soak your bamboo as well. You can soak it into a brine of the vine you want the flavor from.
Right. And an easy way to keep it, maybe sometimes there's, you know, whatever you're steaming is a little bit sticky. Just put down a banana leaf or put down, you know, some leftover lettuce leaves or something and steam on top of those leaves. And that keeps your steamer nice and clean. And it also adds its own little bit of flavor. So there's so many ways.
Parchment.
Yeah, parchment.
Parchment paper is also.
Yeah, exactly. Like in papillote, you're saying.
Right.
So many ways to add a little bit of flavor at what you're doing in your home kitchen. Up next, it's Kitchen Conundrums. Chef Bridget Charters is here. She's one of the instructors at the Hot Stove Society. And we're going to talk a kitchen conundrum with a pasta master herself. On Cairo Radio, it's Tom and Terry in the kitchen. The Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. It's 97.3 FM, and we're going to talk a couple of kitchen conundrums. Maybe just one. Depends on how long it takes to get through it. Chef Bridget Charters is here to the show. Welcome.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Yeah, why don't you take that mask off for a minute? We're 6 feet apart.
Okay.
And then, Amy, we often have people come in on our Facebook page or our message line and leave us a note about... traditional recipes from their families. We love that. We always believe and espout that recipes shouldn't die with you and that they come with much more than a list of ingredients and a list of directions. They come with a family history.
Correct.
And a place and time and a joyous memory and all those sorts of things that come with a recipe. So people like to share. We appreciate when people share recipes that are important to them and why. And then sometimes they don't work.
Yeah.
Or they can't get them to work, like grandma did or something like that. So tell us about the one that we have today.
Okay. Well, listener Annette, hello, Annette, had a kitchen conundrum, and she wanted to ask Chef Bridget about her family's secret homemade ravioli. She is making the dough and everything from scratch, and she is using her Nona's ravioli pole. But the ravioli is breaking in the pot, so she's not sure if it's the dough, if it's too thick or thin, and also how will Annette know when it's ready? Is she overcooking it?
Can I just clarify one thing? So when you talk to her, is she actually rolling the pasta out with
the pole?
That's amazing.
And not using any modern technique.
No machinery.
So, yeah, I'll explain. So what she's using, she's probably got two poles there. And the first one's called a mattarello, and it's a really long rolling pin. It's twice the length of a regular rolling pin. And they usually use it on a big wood board, or they'll do it on the table, that big giant rolling pin, to roll the dough out. Well, then the ravioli pole she's talking about, because Tom, our friend Kathy Connor, her family on the mother's side is Italian, and they have a couple of those, ironically enough, down in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And they're these beautiful kind of regular size rolling pins with these indentations, crimped edges carved into them, and then indentations where the filling is. And so the technique is to roll out the two sheets of dough and then...
To roll them out flat.
Roll them out flat and as thin as possible.
Right.
And then what you do is you take the ravioli filling, which, again, it's a really supple dough. You take the ravioli filling, which is usually ricotta and some eggs and Parmesan and such, and that is spread over the first sheet of pasta to create whatever the shape of the pasta is.
Almost like you would spread butter on a cinnamon roll dough or
correct.
Something over the whole thing?
There's over no, the whole thing, yeah.
No separation?
No.
Okay.
You know, about an inch in thickness, maybe a little bit less. Then you lay the second sheet over the top, and using that ravioli rolling pin, because you want to put enough filling so it's the width of the ravioli pin, then you roll over it, and that pin forces the dough up and creates a separation between the ravioli, and you press really hard back and forth, and then you go back through the...
Oh, my God. No wonder why they're breaking up.
Yeah. It's really complex.
No, hard.
Yeah. It's really complex, and I've been thinking about it, because I've been lately, after that book came out last year, remember that Evan Funk, American Sfogliino? Mm. The book came out last year, and it was like all the rage, and he learned from a woman. He's from L.A. and learned from a woman in Bologna and totally poo-poos the idea of using an electric pasta roller.
Chef Terry, you have a thought on this?
Yeah, I was wondering, how does the, if you have spread your spread all over the pasta and you cut that, how does it stick together?
Well, see, so...
normally you have to put some egg white or some egg yolk or... something to stick the pasta together.
Have you seen one of these rolling pins that have the ravioli shapes carved into them, Terry?
Yes, I know. I've seen them, yes.
So
I've never used them, but I've seen them.
So essentially, you really have to press hard enough to force the filling to the center, and then the edges get crimped by the rolling pin. That's why I'm saying that's very difficult.
Yeah, that's a knock.
You said an inch of filling. It can't be.
So if the dough is supple enough,
uh-huh.
So that's the thing, is
okay,
that when you watch Evan Funk make pasta, the light went on and I was like, okay, there's quite a bit of stretch. So I did a homemade ravioli class back in December with my friend Angela, her family recipe, which I spent years in San Francisco and they invited me to Christmas, mm-hmm. and we had this ravioli. Mm-hmm. Well, the dough is almost like... Sean, what was that? That's the soft. It's the soft, supple.
Okay, so it's
like
more
a
like
dumpling.
Almost like a brioche dough or a dumpling dough.
A dumpling dough. Okay. So it's that hot dumpling type dough where it's all-purpose flour, hot water, uh-huh. and in the case of the Italians, one egg.
Huh.
It's fascinating, and so it's super stretchy. And so when you roll over it, there's a lot of flour, and when you roll over it, that the top layer stretches up to accommodate that soft mm-hmm. filling on the inside. Mm-hmm.
That's been pushed in by the edges of the rolling pin.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that's fascinating to me. I've never tried that. I would poo-poo it in a heartbeat. But it's obviously it's a different animal. It's a different ravioli.
It's huge, sure. huge yeah. deal. So I commend Annette for working on this, and my answer to her question is that dough that she's doing is not supple enough, and so it needs to be wetter,
mm-hmm.
it needs to be more moist, and it needs to have kind of that structure of the gluten, so that 00 flour, and the structure from the egg yolks and the protein in the egg to get that nice and soft so it stretches as you're rolling it out.
Now, a typical rolling pin, I would say, is, those ravioli rolling pins were going to be about 12 inches wide, 14 inches wide. But
about 14 to 16 inches.
I was going to say maybe one way to get the technique down is to try and do a smaller version of that.
Sure. That's
so
a good
maybe
idea.
Maybe you're only working 6 or 8 inches wide and keep working it so that you're on the outside edge of that rolling pin and that you only are trying to get two or three
rows
at a time rather than, you know, I don't know how big a net is. You know, you have to have some.
Got to have some
pipes.
You
have to have some grandma pipes to, yeah. You know, cobras to press down on that rolling pin hard enough to make the seal.
Well, and it's just getting the seal, because then you come back with those cute little crimped cutters.
Oh, you
go back through. You can go back through with a little crimp cutter to just get that to break apart. Now, I've been looking, actually, for one of those rolling pins. I've been doing your thing.
eBay. Yeah.
Looking for those ravioli rolling pins. You know, and so it's amazing. Like, I'm so jealous that you have one of those, Annette.
So here's the other thing then. If let's say you're not doing that and you're making ravioli more like we make it here, which is on the Atlas pasta machine or on the KitchenAid roller, and you've got problems with your ravioli falling apart, either your dough is too dry.
Too dry.
Or you're not getting a seal. And then the third thing you could be doing is that you're putting your pasta into a rolling boil. Instead of more like a hot simmer. What do you think about that, Chef?
I think that the rolling boil is very important because that's going to break it right off the bat.
Yeah, it's going to tumble your raviolis and force, not necessarily force them to break, but you're not going to get any leeway on breakage.
Right. You need a little calmness in there.
Right. So just a simmer.
Right. And also the other thing is to let your ravioli sit. So once you've formed them and you've egg washed them and everything and you've pressed them to make sure they sit – let them sit and rest because then the dough will bind. Don't cook them right away. Give them a sec. Mm-hmm. Let them bind, and they should hold, you know. Okay.
Well, I hope that answers Annette's question. Amy, do you feel like we've covered that's news to me, that whole Italian wood rolling pin. I've seen these before.
Yeah,
it's a mind blower.
Yeah.
If you see one, grab it for me.
I will. Absolutely. Why not? Because I'm not going to do it. I'm using the machine.
Yeah.
Bridget,
you have a pasta by hand class coming up on February 19th, and I'm lucky enough, I've seen a lot of your pasta classes, but people can sign up virtually on hotstovesociety.com for February 19th.
Yeah, absolutely, and we're not doing this technique. I need to find one of those ravioli rolling pins, and someday we'll do that, the whole by hand thing, but we're doing easier pastas that are done with flour and water or chieti, trofia, peachy, things like that to teach you guys by hand. And it's great with the kids.
Yeah.
It's great with friends and family, our pods.
Well, you might want to stay with us for the next segment, Bridget, because we're going to take on another pasta dish, which is a classic, which is a dish that I often tell people, if you're having somebody over for your first date, this is a good dish to make. Shrimp scampi.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. With linguine, right?
Yum. Mm-hmm. Yum.
On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society show. Coming up next, it's pasta with shrimp. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society show. Welcome to our kitchen. Hope you're enjoying your day, afternoon, evening, whenever you're listening to us by podcast or live on the air, on the freeways, scooting along at 80 miles an hour. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat from home.
Coming to us from his home in Madison Valley. Bridget
Jones
is going to hang for this because she's the pasta queen around the Hot Stove Society virtual kitchen. And so I wanted to talk about this dish. I'm not sure why. I guess I'm feeling romantic or whatever it is. But when we were talking about pasta, Amy, and we were setting up the show, I said, let's talk about, oh, I know why, because I was making my coconut prawn pop-up, and I'm a trashy shrimp person, and I think of, you know, coconut prawns are like trashy shrimp. The scampi are like real shrimp.
Oh,
and
elevated.
I was working with these big fat prawns, and I was just thinking about a dish that I used to make for Jackie when we first started dating, because she loves pasta, and she loves shrimp, and I would make linguine with scampi, garlic, and chilies. It wasn't... I knew she was Italian by nature. She was like half Italian, half Greek. But she has very specific ideas about pasta and how al dente it should be. And I could never make it firm enough for her. I would always, according to her, overcook the pasta. And so I worked on this dish a lot. And it,
nice.
We're now married 37 years.
Yay, Jackie. Go get him.
Does she say you make it good now?
She does say I make it good now, and I think there's a couple of keys. And let's start with the prawns or the scampi, right? Chef Terry, I love 1620s. You know, when you buy shrimp in a grocery store, you'll see the numbers on them. And what that means is when it says 21-25s or 50 to 60 or whatever, it means it's the size of the shrimp that they're selling you. And you see a big pile of shrimp in the tray. But if it says 1620, that means on average there's 16 to 20 shrimp per pound. So that if you want to buy a pound or 2 pounds, or if you want six shrimp per person, you know, you can easily decide what it is that you need to order from the fishmonger. So I rarely buy any shrimp that's under 1620s. So that would be 18 to a pound. 15, you know, 12 to 15 are better. I like the big, fat, juicy prawns. And whatever. I like to just split the backs, take the chute out there. People want to call it a vein. It's not a vein. It's the poop chute of the shrimp. And typically, if it's a dark line in there, I take it out. And if you run it between your fingers, you'll realize it's not poop. I mean, it is, but they're bottom feeders, so it's real sand. It's a lot of sandy dirt, and it's gritty, and that's what you don't want to get into your flavor profile there. So, so now I've got my prawns all set, but I leave the shell on. For shrimp scampi, I leave the shell on because that's where the flavor is in the shrimp. And when I hard sear them, when you pull them out of the pasta, you want to be able to lick the butter and oil off of them and the garlic and the chilies, and then you pull the peel off and eat the shrimp, blah, blah, blah. Okay. I'm going to let Terry jump in here now. Do you have any thoughts on shrimp scampi and with linguine?
Well, I used to always say that, you know, for sure thing, in terms of if you're going to be on a date, especially first date or second date or whatever, and you want to make sure your guest doesn't leave, make sure that you always have a pound of shrimp in the freezer.
Right.
And make sure that you have pasta in the cupboard and a can of whole tomato, Marzano or whatever in your cupboard as well. You have the basis for a good, quick, simple dinner. Boil some water, cook some pasta, have a frying pan, sear some shrimp that have been thawed out, obviously, and then a little white wine or a little vermouth and tomato and garlic, obviously, and fresh basil at the end. And you've got the most beautiful dish, simple, straightforward, not complicated to make if you have a little, you know, if you can make two step in the kitchen, and you just have a beautiful dish, and there's no way your guest's going to leave.
So that's what Terry calls a sure thing. I like that, Chef. You're so right. And Chef Bridget, here's what the other thing I would say about that is that don't make it for your date for the first time. You know, that's one of the things we talk about here at the hot stove, right?
Getting it right.
So how often would you make that? I mean, you got to make it first. You have to know this dish. If you're going to try and pull it out of your hat in 30 minutes, you can't just do it for the first time in your life. There's nothing sexy about somebody reading the cookbook while they're trying to make you dinner.
Right. It's true.
You got to own
it. It's true. You have to have the confidence and go for it.
Yeah. Right? You got to own it. So how would you go about that?
So, you know, what Tom is describing for you listeners out there, he's describing alio olio. When he talks about all that wonderful garlicky oil, you know, that's coating the pasta, it's so good. Terry talked about the derivative, adding the tomato to it.
And the those marinara. Are all
that classic seafood pasta. And it's practice cooking the pasta, like Tom says, and getting it perfectly al dente. And it's alarmingly firm to most Americans.
Right.
Don't overcook it. The package says 8 to 10 minutes. Do 7. You know,
the point is, if you need to cook it more in the pan, you can just add a little wine or add a little water in the pan.
Correct.
Instead of being overcooked before you even start in the pan.
But you can start easy peasy. Have a good olive oil and do an alio olio to start. Just do a quick alio olio. So the base, so you're not wasting a lot of scampi, though. We love prawns. Just a little nice extra virgin olive oil in a pan. Gently heat it. Add some sliced garlic or smashed garlic. Add the red pepper flakes, a little bit of salt, and just heat that gently. Pasta's cooking. Turn that off. Turn your sauce off and add your pasta to that sauce and roll it together.
Well, wait, you didn't cook the prawns yet.
No, but I'm just saying they can practice with an aglio olio.
Oh, I see what you're
saying. To get the perfectly cooked pasta, because aglio olio is the perfect late night, I've had too much to drink in Italy.
Yeah.
They make a quick aglio olio.
With 11, Parmesan cheese, yeah.
Yeah. 11, 12, midnight, you know. So, but if you're practicing, like Terry says, go down to Costco. They've got those great bags of prawns. Slack them a little bit, and then usually what I do is I'll just quick sear the prawns.
A lot of people have prawns, not just Costco, just so you know.
No, I know, but Costco has those nice bags. So when Terry talks about having them in the freezer, we've got two of those in the freezer. Yeah. And it's like, okay.
And I like prawns. When you buy prawns in bulk like that, no matter where you're buying them, try to buy the IQF prawns, right? They're individual. So if you just need six prawns, you can pull six out. You don't have to thaw
perfect.
A three-pound box of prawns, right?
Right. So it's so delicious.
And also try to look at where the prawns are coming from.
Right.
You want to try to keep it to the U.S. You don't want your scampi or your prawns to be coming from places where they don't really do good ambassadorship to the planet and don't treat the prawns correctly.
Right, and I'm sure there's places like that in the U.S. too, but there's also certified through the Monterey Bay Aquarium, there's certification prawns out in the marketplace. We use two different varieties down at SeaTown that are both certified by the Monterey Bay out of the Gulf of Mexico. We put that in. Now, here's another thing. This almost broke up my marriage, or actually stopped it before it started, was that I like grated Parmesan. We only have a minute. I like grated Parmesan in my shrimp scampi. I do. I like a lot of it.
You're American.
I like a lot of it.
All right.
No.
And so my wife is Italian. She says, no cheese and seafood. It's like, come on. Are you kidding me?
We're Americans. And if, I'm sorry, Tom Douglas, you are the most American of Americans, I got to say.
I think,
you
is that
break
a good
all
thing?
The rules. You break all the rules because you're a big, strong American dude, and it's like, forget it. I'm American, and I'm going to do what I want.
And my wife wasn't going to marry me because I put cheese in my pasta.
Just hide it. Hide it. Don't
Somebody
tell her.
Offenses.
All right. Whatever.
No cheese.
No, but I gotta say that whole scampi pasta and scampi. I remember my first restaurant experience, and my parents took us. I think every boomer does, where you're like looking at the menu, and down at the bottom is the pasta with scampi. Remember that?
Oh, so sexy!
And it's like, Dad, can I order that?
Because it's expensive, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, up next, we got another whole hour for you. Chef Terry's going to talk about La Chandeleur. And you're going to have to wait.
La Chandeleur.
You're going to have to wait to find out what that is. La Chandeleur. Sorry, I said it wrong. This is Tom Douglas, Terry Rothrow, the chef in the chapeau. Thank you, Bridget, for joining us.
That was fun. Yeah.
Talking pasta. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rosenroth, the chef in a hat from home.
Coming from his home office, we appreciate your time. I can't wait to get you back in the studio here. In this hour, we're going to celebrate La Chandeleur. La Chandeleur, we're going to find out what that is. Chef Eduardo Jordan is here to talk about the Soul of Seattle event, a fundraising event that celebrates Black History Month and highlights local Black-owned businesses. Cities we miss. Chef Terry and I are going to reminisce a bit about Seattle and where it is. When the governor finally says we can open our doors again, where are you going to first plop your butt down? And I have some ideas about where I'm heading. And it might not be where you think, because I have I love restaurants for certain things that are not always about the greatest food or the greatest service or the greatest wine cellar. Sometimes they're just places where you feel comfortable and you have a friend
right.
and you have a connection. And that's where I want to head first. And lastly, we're going to play Food for Thought. Tasty trivia brought to you by Rub With Love and our online Rub With Love shop, the perfect spot to spice up your pantry. Chef Terry, sorry about that, Amy. That's right. Tell us about La Chandeleur, Terry.
La Chandeleur. So La Chandeleur is, in France, a holiday that is celebrated and very much looked forward to by kids, number one, and adults also. It was originally a Catholic holiday related to 40 days after Christmas. It's February 2nd. But as a child, when I grew up, we were not so much into the Catholic religion as much as we were, or into the Catholic holiday as much as we were into eating crepes. I'm sure you've seen kids eating crepes. They're not thinking anything but this is delicious. So we were looking very much forward to La Chandeleur, which to us only represented eating a stack of crepes. La Chandeleur for me as a memory of a child was coming home from school lunch, 2 hour break, and we'd come home and my mom would make a stack of crepes, literally 70 crepes. She would make a whole stack of crepes and we'd have, the savory one would always be, buckwheat crepe or regular crepe. She would make buckwheat every year because kids not necessarily like buckwheat as much as they like the regular flour, crepe. But, everybody knows what crepe is. It's like what do you call it? It's
pancake.
It's a celebration.
Yeah. Huh? It's like a pancake.
Yeah, it's like a pancake. Yeah. And, the most interesting part for a child, I think for a kid, is to put all the stuff on the table and you're going to fill up the crepe with. So we went from in savory, it was always ham, bechamel, and gruyere. That was the savory one. So you put, you put those three ingredients into your crepe, you roll it, and that was your savory crepe. But then after that, it was nothing but sweet. So it went from orange jam, like a nice confit of orange, chopped down and put that on your crepe. When I grew up, after I grew a little bit older, like when I was 11, 12, start putting a little Grand Marnier on top of that. That was delicious. Just a little bit, just for flavoring.
Yeah, I do know.
The hardest one was probably Nutella as we grew up. That was one ingredient that we used as a treat that was so delicious. I mean, Nutella doesn't have necessarily everything clean in it, but it's definitely a great flavor. Junk food, when we talk about junk food.
It's also Italian, Chef. I'm surprised that you let that in your house.
Well, we didn't know it was Italian. Otherwise, we would have probably not touched it. But no, just kidding. No, it was a product that we had as a treat, and that was really good. Regular chocolate as well. Sometimes we'd have a nice tablet of chocolate, break it down in small pieces, and put it straight into the crepe. And a big bowl of whipped cream, vanilla French whipped cream. Oh, crème fouettée, that was delicious. And what else do we have? There is not many. We didn't have any fruit. The only thing my mom would do fruit-wise during this time, because it's in early February, so there's not really any berries or anything available. But there was apple that she would do, sauteed, eighth of an apple, sauteed in a little butter and a little calvados, and sauteed those apples and cooked them tender but not mush. And then we'd put that in the crepe with a little whipped cream on top. Oh, man, that was so delicious.
I bet. She cooked them long enough so that you could bite right through them, but they weren't applesauce.
Correct. It was not applesauce. It was just more like tender apples cooked with a nice little bite of the calvados on top. When you put calvados or any kind of hard liquor, hard alcohol on top of anything and you finish it like that, you still have a little bit of that bitiness from the brandy,
Mm-hmm.
So it's really nice with the sweetness and tenderness of the apple. It tasted really delicious.
Tell people what calvados is.
Calvados is an apple brandy made in Normandy, in France. Normandy is where we have a lot of the apple crop in France, and along with all the dairy and everything, but we have a lot of apple crop down in Normandy, and that's where they make this specific apple brandy. And calvados can be so delicious. Oof. But anyway, going back to school after 2 hours of that, and my mom would make the entire batter. She'd make a big, 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 big bowl of batter. She would cook all the crepes, stack them up, and we'd have crepes left on the table for the next day, for as much as we can eat of crepe for like 24 hours. It was so, so delicious and so fun.
Okay,
so nothing like a treat, like just eating crepe for 24 hours.
I bet you could. Give people, you have a simple crepe recipe, and we only have a minute left, so tell people how to make your crepes.
Take the 2 cups of flour, put them in a bowl, add 2 eggs, it's about 1 egg per cup, and then mix the whole thing together with, add milk until the dough is very supple. And by the way, I have a recipe that I will give Amy to put on the site, but just add the milk, sugar, let it rest. That's the most important part. You mix the whole thing together really thoroughly, strain it through a fine sieve, let it rest on the counter for a couple of hours, and then well, before you make it, melt a good amount of butter, gently incorporate the butter into your dough, and then let it sit for another 30 minutes. Now you're ready to make crepes. And those crepes will not stick because they have enough butter in there.
Right.
You just keep making them, and the memory of crepes. I want to make some crepes right now.
I think you should. I think you should send some down to the hot stove so Amy and Sean and I could have a little bite. We could have chandelier right here in the hot stove.
Oh, that would be so fun. No, I recommend people at home, especially these days, plenty of time on your hands, make a nice batch of crepe in the morning, let it sit, and then go at it for lunch. Make a couple of favorites. If you can find buckwheat flour, it's also a very delicious way to do a savory crepe. Obviously a different beast of a crepe, but definitely much more stronger. And then you don't put sugar in there. You put salt and pepper and even fresh chives if you want. Chop some fresh chives in there.
The buckwheat crepes.
More like a savory pancake.
The buckwheat crepes I had in Paris, I believe, were they didn't use milk. They used cider, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Raw cider is very commonly used, and it's really good because it's very, I mean, it's definitely a different flavor. It's kind of yeasty, and with the buckwheat added in there, it's very, very savory.
Okay, we got to go and get on the horn with Eduardo Jordan coming up next here on the Hot Stove Society Show, Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rothero, the chef in the hat from home.
And we're going to welcome in Eduardo Jordan right on our line. Hi, Eduardo.
Chef, how are you guys?
Fabulous.
We are fantastic. I hear you've been traveling.
Yes. I disobeyed orders, and I had to actually refresh myself and rejuvenate my soul, and I ended up going to Haiti for a week-long recharge and kind of celebration of sport.
Well, congratulations on making it back safe and sound. Are you in quarantine or are you back at work?
No, I went through my 10-day quarantine process. I went through two testings, all negative, you know, followed all the right CDC recommended procedures or recommendations, and I am now back in action and been back in action for the last week or so. So we've been running fast right now. It's been a busy January, you know, getting everything in order, what we have going on, which I'm so excited to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about that. It's the soul of Seattle. It's a
correct
benefit to help foster relationships and empower the community through food and to shed light on the diverse food and Black-owned businesses here within Seattle. So give us the rundown.
Yeah, I mean, this all kind of started last year, and maybe like kind of started years before. You know, as chefs, and I imagine you get this, Tom and Terry, all the time, people always asking for something, in a sense. Can you donate to this auction? Can you be part of this gala? And, you know, honestly, like my give started feeling indirect. And I've been such a direct kind of supporter of my community, been such a grassroots kind of person. And I wanted to do something that's more direct. And so initially I thought I was going to open up my own nonprofit or foundation. I realized that's a lot of work and I don't have the time. So I ended up like bringing everything together, what I do for Black History Month. We were already doing a series of events, bringing in chefs, doing like panels, doing talks. And last year, what we did is we created the Soul of Seattle. It was a one-day event. We held it at the African American Museum, the Northwest African American Museum here in Seattle. We raised over $260,000 for that event, supporting the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle and Rainier Scholars. But the whole gist of the event was actually bringing together the African American and Black community that is in our restaurant industry. One, we don't get the opportunity to network that much because we're all busy. We're all running our businesses and we're all trying to survive. And two, like, you know, it's just so important that we actually know each other. Like we have that network and that bond. And so what we did is we brought everyone together in a one-time event. We celebrated with food and dance. We had raffles, we had auctions. And it was just a magnificent event. And we thought that we had a template that we'll be able to follow into 2020 going into 21, and then the pandemic kicked in. And so You know, we're debating if we're going to do this again. We have a lot going on with our restaurants trying to survive, all the pivots that all of us had to go through this last year and still will be this year. But we made the decision in November that we're going to keep this event alive. And, it's so important that we actually do this because, the reality is that, like, you know, the restaurant industry and small businesses definitely have been impacted by COVID, but, our Black communities, and that means also Black-owned businesses have been disproportionately affected also by COVID. And it's just like the impact that COVID has had on these communities. It's going to be hard for many of them to bounce back. And what we fear and what I fear is that Seattle is going to lose so many of these establishments and locations that are the fabric of our communities that, you know, bring some soul into the Seattle area. And so I think it's super important that this event is because people need to know that these places exist. People need to support these places because if not, they will not be here after 2021. And so the Soul of Seattle will live in a virtual format this year. And I'm excited to talk about it with you guys.
No, it's very cool what you're doing. I really respect that. It's encouraging to know that there are still people standing up and wanted to keep that forward. You know, we can't let that die. We have to keep our community together. And definitely the diversity is necessary to accomplish anything.
Right. Yeah, without the rainbow in our business, it seems to me, whether it's Black owned or gay owned or whatever, without that rainbow in our business, we are much the less for it as a city.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We lose our soul, as I keep saying to a lot of people, and we don't want to lose that. Seattle has worked so hard to become a more diverse city, to be known more than just for its salmon and coffee beans and hiking trails. Mm-hmm. And so we have to make sure that we don't lose that identity that we've been working so hard to achieve.
You know, I myself, and I'm as guilty as anyone of being oblivious sometimes, but I know over the last couple of years, I've been working to try and understand diversity better and to make diversity happen rather than sitting back and hoping it happens. And so it's correct. It's fascinating to me to watch this project come about and, you know, to see where we can jump in as a restaurant community, as me, as a white restaurateur. How do I help my Black neighbors? You know, it's been an eye opener for me over the last few years, and I appreciate it. I'm a better person for it.
Well, thank you, Chef, for opening your eyes and also, you know, spreading the word, because it's all about us, you know, tapping on our neighbor and making sure that we're being supportive of them, and mm-hmm. also educating those who may not have opened up their eyes faster than, you know, some of us. So
right,
super important.
Okay, let's talk about the event. How do people get involved?
Yeah, so we just released tickets. We released it on Friday, January 22nd. That is the fastest way to support. You can go to the website, www.seattlesoul.com. We list all of our events that's going on. And so what we do, what we're going to have is a series of events throughout the month of February. These include chef demonstrations, national panels with chefs like Marcus Samuelson, Mashama Bailey, Eric Ajapan, myself, and some other national known chefs. And each week is a little bit different. For our demos, we are going to feature local chefs. We're going to have a live meaning virtual live demos that people will be able to tune into, and also purchase meals from those participating chefs' restaurants. So, one, we want to drive people to support these locations by picking up and purchasing a meal, also by enjoying the show to actually learn a little bit more about these chefs, to gain a little bit more appreciation of what they do and what they've been through to get to where they are. And at the end of the month, on February 26th, we're going to have, and I'm excited to announce this now, we just signed DJ Questlove as our guest DJ.
Awesome.
In the month off with a beautiful celebration dance party. And, you know, it's just going to be amazing. And, you know, we're so excited. We've been working so hard to put all this together. You know, we had to purchase a production team now to make all of this happen. You know, we've raised a lot of money right now, and we still have a long way to go. But we're super excited about this event, this series of events that we have going on. So
people understand, Eduardo Jordan runs restaurant and is a chef for a living. Now he's becoming an entrepreneur, putting things together with a whole team of people. Yeah, people don't realize how much more work that he's putting on your plate every day.
Jesus, it is a lot of work. And that was the hardest decision this year. You know, our restaurants have been impacted just like every other restaurant in the city. Like, my restaurants have seen a 70% decrease in revenue. You know, that's a hard, you know, hard thing to digest and also try to navigate. And to say, like, I'm going to forgive putting all my time and energy into my restaurants and make this event happen because I believe in my community. I want to support these small black-owned businesses. It's just like, you know, share the wealth of publicity and notoriety with, you know, my friends and my family. Like, you know, that's super important to me, but people got to recognize, like, there's a lot of sacrifice that comes with making that decision. But I'm so excited and I'm so happy that I can and I have the ability to do this, and I have it because I have the support of my team. I have the support of friends like you guys and the rest of the restaurant community, our sponsors who came in to help make this possible. And it's going to be an amazing event and much needed for our city.
All right. So just so a reminder, tickets are on sale now at www.thesoulofseattle.com. Last year they sold out in a week. So I would imagine this year with Questlove and with people wanting to get back to it from last year, that they're going to sell out even faster. So if our listeners want to get in there, get on there right now, thesoulofseattle.com. And Eduardo,
make one correction, Chef.
Okay, yeah.
That is TheSeattleSoul.com.
Oh, okay. So I have it wrong on my paper here. TheSeattleSoul.com. Okay.
Correct.
TheSeattleSoul.com. All right. Hang with us. Eduardo's coming back at the end of the show to test his hand at Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. We said earlier, Terry and I said we were going to crush you before you were on the air, but now we're going to be more. Now we're going to be more nice and let you in. Up next,
I love that.
It's the cities we miss right here in Seattle on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Hi there. It's back in the Hot Stove Society kitchen on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Gary Rothero, the chef in the hat from home.
From his home office there in Madison Valley. We're going to jump into our segment that we like to call Cities We Miss. Chef Terry and I both lament the lack of travel in our schedules. I don't miss as much as I was traveling, but I certainly miss traveling at all. And so we've been dreaming about places that we are going to visit when COVID goes away and we can get back on a plane willy-nilly without having to spend 2 weeks in quarantine or this or that, getting tested and all the things that come with travel these days. So, Chef Terry, we have been to New Orleans. We've been to New York City. We've been to
Chicago.
I thought since we are not sure when we're going to be able to get back to Seattle, one of my favorite things to do is try all the restaurants in Seattle, the new ones especially. But also, there's nothing that makes me feel more at home in this town than going to some of my favorite places where I can pull up a chair. I know the owner. I can order exactly what I order every time I walk in the front door there. And kind of just relax and have a meal rather than a restaurant experience. And I say that, you know, I'm a restaurateur. You're a restaurateur. We love restaurant experiences. But sometimes you want to have a meal with a friend and you're by yourself. And I love that feeling. So my first place on my list of where I would head to when we can go back indoors and sit at a counter instead of having sit, you know, 20 feet away from somebody would be the counter at Tai Tung. Harry Chan is the owner there. We've been, I've been going there since I was a young cook at Boondocks on Broadway in 1978. It used to be the late night place we would go after cooking all night at Boondocks. And I didn't know Harry for the longest time. I just went with buddies or this or that. I didn't pay attention. But maybe 5 or 10 years ago, I got to know Harry, and we've become friends over the last 5 years, and I sit at the counter out front where he is kind of the waiter, owner, manager, and when he gets busy, he's the chef. Also, he runs back and helps in the kitchen, and it's been a great joy to get to know him a little bit. And I even invited he and his wife out to our farm in Prosser for one of our special farm dinners, the cook-alongs. And even that, we got to know each other a little bit more. And it's funny how you, when you break down some walls of language and conceptions and maybe misconceptions, how fun it is to get to know other restaurateurs. Where, Chef, are you thinking about for your first meal out when all of this kind of comes to a head?
Well, you know what's funny is because there is a restaurant about 200 yards from my house called the Harvest Vine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been there, obviously, for, you know, 20 years now, probably. And, you know, I was thinking about that when we talked about doing this. And I was like, where would I go first? I mean, it's not close to my house. Obviously, they're not open for indoor. It's one place where you can just walk in, sit at the counter, watch the guys cook. And I pretty much know what I would order if I was going back right now. I would order the big salad that they have, which is a very simple, laid, thin layer of big salad, just a little sherry vinaigrette on top, a little toasted nuts, and a little cheese. That's a delicious starter to a meal. And then I would have probably a lamb chop, because they have a beautiful little lamb chop there that I order from time to time, and that's really delicious. I already know what I'm going to eat. I already know how it's going to feel. Mm-hmm. I know the feel of the place, and I mix that.
Yeah, you feel comfortable. And not unlike the Cheers bar, right, where you just everybody knows your name, and you know what you're going to eat or drink. Right. And
it's very comfortable, and we have another one down the street that reminds me of the same thing. I'm always welcome there, Bar Cantinera. You know, it's a small place. Obviously, too small right now to do anything with COVID protection inside. So, but you know, once they reopen, it's a great, it's a feel good neighborhood. Just come on in, sit down. We have a table. You sit down. You put a, you order a simple bottle of wine. Have a nice little dinner. A good pasta, homemade. And I don't know. It, to me, it's the first thing that nourishes the soul. It's not just the food. It's the whole experience. And sitting at that counter and feeling good and feeling like you're home again, kind of idea. You know, it's very, to me, those are the quite essential restaurants of the communities that cannot disappear. Those have to stick around because those are important.
Yeah, you're as comfortable sitting there as you are at your home kitchen table, so for sure. Amy, you had a thought in your head about where you're going to go when time comes. Some people have been telling me they can't wait for the Palace Kitchen to open.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of that neighborhood, homey place. There's a big bar, lots of places to sit and talk to the bartender. Order a pile of the little plain raviolis and some chicken wings or this or that. But where's your place that you can't wait to get back to?
I cannot wait to go to the Wedgwood Broiler with a pile of friends sitting in a little round booth. They have carpet and walls, and the servers
carpeted
are,
walls.
Yes, it's amazing. And I'm going to sit in the bar with about six friends around a little table, and I'm going to order the popcorn shrimp with a Negroni on the rocks. Then I'm going to have a Bombay Sapphire Martini with extra olives, a side salad. Have you had the side salad there?
I don't think so. What makes it good? Is that the one with the goldfish on top?
It's Cheez-Its.
Cheez-Its on top.
It is a tossed green leaf salad with your choice of dressing, salami strips, Cheez-Its. It's delicious.
What choice of dressing do you go with?
Okay, I go with ranch, but I like a little vinegar.
Okay, so you like a tart ranch.
Like a little tart ranch.
This is literally bringing tears to your eyes.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Now you've had a Negroni, you've had a martini, you've had popcorn shrimp, and you've had a side salad with salami, cheese, and tart ranch.
Yeah.
Then you're going to go to the dining room?
No. The secret is to not go into the dining room. You stay at the lounge.
Oh, you stay in the lounge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Usually that's enough for me for dinner. However, I probably will go big and order the baked potato.
No steak, but just the baker.
No, I just, it's usually the baked potato or a side of their steamed broccoli.
You know, last time I had a baked potato there, it came in a foil jacket, and that's a no-no for me.
Oh, okay.
Well, because they steam. They steam in there. I like my baked potatoes to have a nice crispy crust on them. But I'll eat
it
anyway.
You'll still join us?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. Sean, do you want to jump in here? Where can you wait? Sean is our sound engineer. Where can't you wait to get back to?
Gosh, well, just in the whole sort of trashy vein of things.
You don't have to.
Well, it's I kind of have a Cheers place that's called.
Okay.
It's a Pizza Mart. It's really bad pizza.
Yes.
Well, it's not actually. For what it is, I think it's totally fine.
And it's called just, A Pizza Mart.
It's called A. I don't know why they chose to include the article A in the branding of the name. Seems like a strange choice.
I can
choice.
Tell you why as a business person. It's the first thing that comes up in an alphabet.
Ah, you're right. That's right.
That's right.
Okay, but, so where is this place and what do you get there?
Well, there's one in Belltown, and it just happened to be kind of on my way, usually my stroll home from downtown where we're all at now. And it just kind of ended up being sort of like a meeting place for me and a few of my friends, and it doesn't really break the bank, so it helps to be kind of a place that a reoccurring theme there. They kind of let us play the music we want to play.
And they have seats, obviously.
They do, and they were kind of rolling with they pivoted with the changes for a while in all that's going on, but it just, you know, that last wave of everything just kind of shut it all down.
I'm sure. Well, isn't that interesting, the variety of places, mm-hmm. and yet I think... once again, Terry has the fanciest taste of the group.
Mm-hmm.
I'm as typical as I'm in the International District. Amy is up in
Wedgwood. I love a lounge.
Yeah, you love a lounge. The Lava Lounge. Where did I go that had the Lava Lounge? I can't remember. But Chef Terry is Bar Cantonetta and Harvest Vine in his neighborhood. So, good. We have revisited Seattle. It's post-COVID. We're back in our heads, in our comfort zone. And I think it's a great place to hang out.
And I think a stroll through Pike Place Market is a must before any of these. Go and revisit the soul of a city.
Yeah. I shuck oysters down there on Saturdays and Sundays, and I got to tell you, it is such a joy to be back in that environment. I had been out of it for quite a long time because I wasn't working day to day in that restaurant, but our restaurant Seatown there at the north end of the market is connected. It's right across the street. You know, it's connected, and it feels good. And I love looking down that that market every day, and the crowds in front of Starbucks and in front of Pierowski and Le Panier and all the things. See Donnie down there at the meat counter and Pike Place Fish Dudes. It's just fun to be back in the mix in what, Terry, you're accurately describing as the heart and soul of our city.
Yeah, and it's nice to see people back out.
Yeah. Okay, up next, Eduardo's coming back to join us for Food for Thought, tasty trivia right here on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. All right, we're back. It's time for Food for Thought, tasty trivia. Trivia today is brought to you by Rub with Love, handcrafted versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about every meat, fish, or vegetable you can think of. And yes, we make them ourselves in our Ballard warehouse. Look for Rub with Love products in your local grocery store or butcher shop and find them online at tomdouglas.com or anywhere you shop. Honestly, they're at the Q, they're at the Met, they're all over. Amy, who's our lucky winner today?
We're playing for our friend Annette.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, had the ravioli question.
She did.
Yeah.
She did. And she's going to win a 4-pack of Around the World with Rub with Love, a Chinese 12 Spice, Spicy Tokyo, Bengal Masala, and African Peri Peri.
What a lucky day for her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Terry, you are up first. I'm going to ask you 5 questions. The loser today is going to pay for shipping to ship the 4-pack of Rub over to Annette. And here is your first question. Name the ice cream company which offers the Grateful Dead ice cream flavor.
Ben and Jerry.
Woohoo, nice.
What is it called, Ben and Jerry's Grateful Dead?
Yeah, what's the flavor?
That's the name of it?
It's called Grateful Dead.
Oh, my God.
All right, second question. What is the name of the dessert that is named after a famous ballerina?
Pavlova.
Correct, named after Anna Pavlova.
Wow, Google's very fast this morning.
Yeah. All right, here's a multiple choice one. A crumpog is a regional pancake from the United Kingdom. They are prepared from eggs, butter, flour, salt, and milk. They are traditionally eaten as birthday treats and are buttered, served in a pile, and eaten warm. From which country are these from? A, Scotland, B, Wales, C, England, or D, Ireland?
I'm going to go with Scotland.
Incorrect. It is Wales. Okay, here's
that's
another
a new one for me.
Yeah. I was trying to stump everyone with that one. Okay, another multiple choice. As you know, pasta comes in lots of different shapes. Do you know how many? A, 310, B, 57, C-250 or D-776?
I'm going to go C-57.
Ooh, incorrect.
Is that the number?
There are 310.
Official ships.
310. Official.
Right. Wow. Man, that was close.
That goes under the category of information you do not need to know.
Well, exactly. We should have known. We might be paying for shipping. Okay, another
you guys are hard.
Yeah.
All right, what's my last question? Go ahead.
Last question. Which of the following Italian regions is known for its salt-free bread? Campania, Veneto, Tuscany, or Piedmont?
Yeah, I'm going to go Campania.
Incorrect. It is Tuscany.
That was not a good show today.
No,
Two out of five.
You started off strong. Sorry. Two out of
yeah.
five. All right,
what I
Eduardo.
Say, I want to give Eduardo all the chances in the world.
Yeah. thank you for playing fair, Chef.
No problem.
Okay, Google ready. Can Alrighty. You name the delicious dessert that is made from layers of jelly, sponge, fruit, custard, and cream?
Trifle.
Yay!
Ah, very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool.
Okay, second question. What dessert is made with fruit, coconut, and is sometimes served as a salad, and it also shares a name with an alcoholic drink?
What is that, ambrosia?
Correct.
Does he get extra points for his Jeopardy kind of
response? Yeah, I liked that.
Yeah, because I was definitely not there.
All right, this one is multiple choice. This visually spectacular dessert consists of a thin pancake covered in a rich sauce of caramelized sugar and butter with a strong orange flavor arising from orange juice, zest, and the orange-based liquor. It is set on fire at the table. Mm-hmm. What dessert am I? A, crepe Napoleon, crepe Suzette, crepe Vichyssoise, or crepe flambé?
Crepe flambé.
Ooh, incorrect.
Suzette.
All right, another multiple choice. Which nation ate the most pasta in 2012? A, China, B, Italy, C, the United States of America, or D, Russia?
United States.
Ooh, incorrect. It is B, Italy.
How is that possible?
There's over a billion people in China. Hold on. Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was American.
Oh, man.
Okay, last question.
Here we go. Moment of truth, right?
It's the moment. Which traditional Italian dish is made from a New World crop that wasn't introduced into Italy until the 15th or 16th century? A, risotto, B, farina, C, polenta, or D, gnocchi?
Oh, my goodness. Polenta, corn.
Yay, you're correct.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
That would have been my guess, too.
Yeah, New World.
New World. Okay, you're in the lead now with 3 out of 5. All right, Tommy D.
All right, I'm ready.
No pressure.
Which dessert can be known as omelet surprise or Norwegian omelet, but was given a North American and much more famous name today?
Omelet surprise is the name of the dessert, and it's from Norway? Is that what you said?
Which dessert can be known as omelet surprise or Norwegian omelet, but was given a North American and much more famous name today?
Come on, Tom. You know this.
Do I?
Yes. Oh, you think Hotel Dupont. I bet you they had a nice one there.
Omelette surprise. I haven't a clue.
All right.
Omelette Norwegian. It's Baked Alaska.
Baked Alaska.
Baked Alaska is considered an omelette surprise. Guess all the egg whites, huh?
That makes sense. Yeah, I guess.
It's actually, in French, we call it Omelette Norwegian.
Okay, which of the following is not one of the three standard banana split toppings? A, pineapple, B, chocolate, C, butterscotch, or D, strawberry?
Pineapple.
Incorrect, it's butterscotch.
Strawberry.
I love butterscotch. And I hate banana splits.
I know, that's why I put that on
there. Yeah, great.
Banana splits are great.
It's not a banana split without the butterscotch.
We've been fighting about this for years. All right. Rag Monk pancakes are usually served with bacon and berries. Unlike most other pancakes, the batter for these pancakes include a grated vegetable. Can you name that vegetable?
I can't.
Okay. Good job.
Cabbage.
Potato.
Potatoes. I'm getting crushed.
Potato. You are
getting
crushed.
Shredded. I might as well be a latke.
Okay. True or false? We'll give you a true or false one. Pasta alla fangole is made with lobster meat. True or false?
False.
Correct. What is it made with?
Yay.
Clams.
Correct. Okay.
And it's vongole.
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 What is the cartoon cat Garfield's favorite food?
Oh, my God. Jerry of Tom and Jerry.
No.
Oh.
Lasagna.
Lasagna. Why is that funny?
I love it.
He just likes lasagna.
He loves lasagna.
All right. I have to. Not only do I have to give the gift, but I have to ship the gift at my own expense.
You got to ship it.
That is embarrassing right
full,
there.
We call that full circle, Chef.
You're never invited full back, Eduardo. Chef. Never, ever coming on.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, boys, for joining me. If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Radio Show. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is produced by the mean Amy Richardson.
Yep.
Sound and production by Sean McFadden, and our editor is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. Also, remember, if you miss any episode of our Hot Stove Society show on Cairo, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app.
Thanks for listening and have a wonderful weekend.